Chapter 50. Caris wasn't certain how he'd gotten the message to her without its being intercepted. For that matter, she wasn't certain it hadn't been. She wasn't certain the message was real. Even if it was real, she wasn't certain it wasn't a trap. Koyos had asked her to meet. Koyos, her lost brother, though now he styled himself the White King. Koyos, who had been her favourite. He'd signed the message, Koyos. So here she was, in a skimmer with a half-dozen blackguards, waiting for the trap or the prank to reveal itself, or just possibly for a meeting that might change the future of the satrapies and save tens of thousands of lives. The blackguards kept her skimmer moving in random circles so they wouldn't have to flee from a full stop if it came to that. Each man wore his spectacles and had full grip of his colour and a musket. Caris didn't offer advice to the blackguards on their disposition, though she would have, when she was first elevated. She had brought only the best blackguards, and they knew their work. Except, of course, that they had allowed her to come at all. Commander Ironfist might not have. She had prepared her arguments before she'd summoned Commander Fisk. They had all boiled down to one thing. If I can end the war with words alone, it's worth the risk. If Fisk had been adamant, she would have brought up that she missed her brother. That was true. But it was false, too. She was pretty certain the man who had been her brother was long dead. But Commander Fisk hadn't argued at all.
"Who do you want on it?" he'd asked instead.
"You're not going to try to stop me?"
"You're the Iron White. In my experience, you stop when you're good and ready."
Her brow wrinkled. "I don't know if I like being trusted so much. Have I changed so much? Has the world?" Fisk only sighed.
"I only know one man who could stop you. I'm begging the High Lady's pardon, but I'm not that man, nor will I tell him without your leave."
Fisk didn't mean Gavin. He didn't mean Ironfist. He meant Andros. Was this what happened when you didn't have strong voices around you? Gavin and Ironfist would have kept her from making mistakes. Instead, she was alone. For a single moment, she remembered the day when she was 7 years old and her hateful slave tutor, Izzer, had forbidden her to leave her reading lessons until she finished 10 pages, even though Caris told her that she needed to use the latrine. Shaking and crying, she'd made it through 5 pages before she'd wet her lane. She opened the door and Izzer was gone. Her father was in the library instead, meeting with an important noble. He'd looked at her as if she disgusted him.
"Look what you've done!"
She soul-wept, hysterical. But he had pushed her away when she tried to hug him. Caris had never tried to hug him again. It had been Koyos who'd found her after she'd fled. He'd wrapped his cloak around her and walked through the manse with her. When their mother had asked why Caris was wearing his cloak, he'd said they were playing a game. He'd taken her to the nursery slaves to wash her and her clothing and commanded their silence about the matter. The slave Izzer hadn't been beaten. That wasn't Rissom Whiteoak's way. That would have been too direct for him. Instead, he sold her to the silver mines at Lorien. Caris still felt a stab of shame at the elation she'd felt when she'd heard that. The silver mines. An educated slave should never have faced such a punishment, especially not a woman. Ah, that was why she'd thought of that day now. Shame and disappointment and her brother, all twined together like wintering serpents in a ball of slithering warmth. She was still thinking of that day, of that young man whom she'd adored as only a young girl can adore her big brother, when they spotted the islands. His note had invited her to choose whichever island she wished in the cluster, that she might be assured there was no trap. There were a dozen tiny islands here, differentiated mostly by how much or how little vegetation covered them. The blackguards studied them through long lenses and picked one. She jumped out of the skimmer as it came to rest on the blindingly bright white sand. Her blackguards had chosen one of the smallest islands. As she waded ashore, they spread a cloth over the skimmer to hide its workings. Caris had worn her whites. She thought that the odds of an assassination attempt were about 1 in 2. Yes, Commander Ironfist would have been furious they'd come. With those odds, there was no need to make herself clumsy with frocks and petticoats. She had a brace of Elysian wheel-lock pistols tucked in her belt. They were all ivory and scrimshaw, a bit fussy for Caris's tastes, but they were also the finest pistols in the Chromeria's armory. Truth was, the whole Iron White thing had taken on a life of its own. Every diplomat and noble who appeared before Caris brought a gift that somehow incorporated white, white leather, white silk, white cotton, white flowers, flowers. White with actual iron, white with platinum because it was more expensive, and every once in a while some daring soul would do white with gold. For the sun, you see? Because you are so close to Orholum, you see? Oh, I see. Did no one, remember her love for colour? If only someone would bring her something red, or green, or black, she would grant their petition immediately, regardless. But Caris wasn't a woman any more. To become the Iron White was to become a symbol. If her greatest sacrifice in this war was giving up her preferred fashions, she should really wake each day with a heart full of gratitude. She could only hope that someday the inner woman resembled these trappings. "There he is," Gil Grayling said, lens up to his eye. "But what the hell is that?" He handed the monocular off to his brother. "Don't know, but it's moving fast," Gav said. "He wouldn't reveal that they have skimmers like this," Caris said, "I don't think. Not for free." When the ship got close, she saw that it was shaped like a chariot, and that thick lines disappeared into the waves before it. 6 dorsal fins, like jagged teeth, bit the waves. As they entered the shallows, Caris caught sight of a hammer-shaped head and an eye streaming blood, or glowing from within with some demonic light. It took everything she had not to step farther away from the waves. A rational part of her whispered, "They're simply will-cast sharks, probably with red luxin." But her stomach didn't hear that. Her weak knees couldn't hear it. Her tight throat wouldn't. "Iron White, Caris. Iron White." She painted on ambivalence and hoped it could fool the brother who'd known her so well. Heedless of the sharks, 6 bodyguards clad all in white hopped from the chariot and waded ashore. They even wore white veils of precious silk and bore ataghans and punch daggers and krisyes. There were no muskets that she could see. In turning back to their old gods, were the pagans turning back to old technologies as well? Or Holland let it be so? Upon reaching the shore, the bodyguards turned and cast blue luxin to make a bridge. The White King walked to shore without even dampening his boots, leaving only a hunchbacked charioteer behind. They stood nearly 100 paces from each other, a man in white and a woman in white, across the white sands under Orholm's white, hot eye. Caris drew her pistols and handed them off. She drew her beach hua and her ataghan and handed them off as well. Last, she took her green and red spectacles off their necklaces and gave them away. The White King handed off a scepter that could serve as a mace and a simple hunting knife. He started across the sand without hesitation. Of course, either of them could be hiding another weapon. But they were drafters. They both were weapons, against which the only defense possible was vigilance. Caris walked toward him. When she'd been captured by King Haradul, her brother had appeared in the vast carapace of Luxin armor he'd created for himself, but this man didn't so much as shine in the sun. There were no Luxin angles reflecting light, no winking blues or flashing yellows. He was smaller than she remembered, barely taller than she was. But then she saw his face. Somehow she'd forgotten. The scouring of time a mercy. The burn scars. Orholm. Her beloved brother's face looked as if someone had given a wax poppet to a cruel child. His face had been melted. One eye was lower than the other. A thick knot of tissue had fused his cheek to his neck and then been cut. He looked far, far worse than when she'd met with him in Tyria. It couldn't all be the lighting, but neither did these look like fresh scars. He'd been burnt then, but not misshapen. She composed herself against the pity and despair. She had to be sharp and cold for this. She was the White, and her office settled over her like a blanket of snow, covering the cracks in her armor. "Caius," she said, choosing to let some warmth seep through her tone. She was happy to see him. She was happy to have a chance to end this war, slight though it might be.
"You've come a long way since last we met," he said, gesturing to her robes.
Even his voice had changed from when he'd been young. Husky, damaged by the smoke, changed by that damned fire that had changed everything else. "As have you," she said.
"You mean this?"
he asked, pointing to his face.
It was hexes before, to minimize your horror, I hoped. I have since become more comfortable in my own skin. Or what's left of it, I should say.
He smiled as if it were some unfunny joke. I was referring to the lands you've conquered, and the untold misery you've spread for scores of thousands, Carys said.
We've freed 4 of the 9 kingdoms of old, he said, barely hearing her. But there is so much to be rebuilt, so much that was destroyed through ignorance and greed.
It was as if they were speaking different languages. He saw himself as a builder. This is hopeless, then, isn't it? There is no bridge across this chasm, she said. He smirked, and it was his old lips, unscarred, his old expression, and an old memory.
I had forgotten how intuitive you are, sister. You wrapped yourself in the blue virtues, but you understand with your heart first. Always did.
And does that make my judgments suspect? She asked, coolly.
On the contrary, I think you've grasped the crux of the matter. There can be no peace between us. Only pauses to rearm.
Is that what you're seeking, an armistice? Carys asked.
Yes, he said. Effective immediately. My armies have advanced as far as Azuria, in Blood Forest. We'll give the city back as a sign of goodwill. In the north, we've crossed the Great River. We'll fall back to the west bank. The truce lasts until spring. It will give everyone a chance to harvest the fall and winter crops, lest everyone starve.
My generals tell me Azuria is indefensible. You're giving me what I could take with little effort.
And yet you have not taken it, Koyos said. Perhaps you are spread thinner than you would like to admit.
He was right, although the real reason they'd not taken the city was that the question arose, what then? Her armies were needed elsewhere, and the Chromeria and Satrap Bruin Willowbough of Blood Forest were concentrating on keeping Green Haven free. Instead, she said, if we both rearm, it only guarantees that the next war will be even bloodier.
Life is lived in the pauses between wars. Any peace is better than any war, some say.
Do you take me for one of those? She asked.
I'm not asking anything of you. Any place your troops hold today, they shall keep. It shall be my side that falls back.
And I'll guess that your spies will be repeating all this on the streets of Big Jasper within the week, undermining support for the war?
That sounds like an excellent idea. It's a weakness of your empire. People here never want to bleed for strangers over there, whereas my word is holy writ. I command the gods themselves. I say when it is time to bleed and when it is time to build, and none question me. Not bad for the weakling once beaten by your sadly deceased husband,
What you've suffered doesn't excuse what you've done, Carys said.
I'm not looking for an excuse.
And then she saw the terrible logic of it. Koyos might be faced with a particular weakness right now that prompted him to a truce. Perhaps he was waiting for someone to be bought off, or a critical shipment of black powder to come through. Certainly any pause would undermine support in the satrapies, but those things might not be the point at all. Koyos wanted both sides to rearm and come back to battle with more terrible weapons because Koyos wanted slaughter. He wanted to demolish an entire generation. It wasn't just that he wanted to kill everyone who stood in his way, and war was the most efficient way of lining up your enemies and finding out which of your friends might be too formidable someday. He wanted to prove that the Chromeria's way of doing everything was utterly broken. He wanted to kill their apologists and anyone whose very memory would gainsay his new story. It's easier to build a new culture on the graves of the dead than around the homes of the living. This isn't the kind of trap I was expecting, she said.
Trap my own sister, he said,
but his mouth twisted. If you kill me, I'll be a martyr for attempting to find peace, and you'll prove that you're untrustworthy. Damn it, Koyos, how'd you come to this?
Fire burns away illusions, he said.
So now you'll plunge the satrapies into the fire, hoping it cripples everyone else as well? She asked bitterly.
I'm not a madman, he said. It's beneath you to suggest I am. Too convenient by half. As lazy as I'd expect from some Chromeria witch or magisterium sycophant. I thought better of you, though.
She looked at him sadly. Your plan isn't mad, brother. It's evil.
Evil is what we call what we don't understand.
She took a deep breath. I'm going to leave here today, and wonder why I didn't try to kill you before you could do more harm, aren't I?
It's not in you to break a pledge, sister.
Maybe it is, this once. How do you do it? She asked. How do you convince them all that you're a polychrome?
Simple. I became one, he said. The same way Dazen Guile did it.
He noted her confusion.
You've either become a better liar than I'd have expected of you, sister, or you've stayed exactly, disappointingly the same, and you're still the wide-eyed naif who helped start the last war. You do know that the man you married is Dazen Guile?
She tried not to react, but his face lit up.
You did. So not a complete naif. But he kept some things from you. Heartbreaking.
Are you really trying to poison my marriage?
Dazen took all pleasures of the flesh from me. If I can be a fly in his ointment, I will. I wish he were alive so I could kill him with my own hands. But we must all deal with our little disappointments, mustn't we?
I think we've said everything profitable here, Caris said. Goodbye, brother. Nice chariot. She turned her back and started walking away.
I did have a trap, he said as she left, but I'll not trigger it. My gift to you, sister, for the love we shared.
She turned again. The next time we meet, O White King, shall be the last. For the love I bear still for that precious boy who died in fire, I will end you. And I'll weep for him. But for your death I will feel only relief. He said nothing, only watched her go. And when they pushed away from the island, the skimmer was surrounded by a score of will-cast sharks. The fearsome beasts fell into an escort formation around the skimmer. But as soon as they reached deeper water, an enormous black shape burst through their ranks and scattered them like chaff. A whale? A black whale? More than just men are concerned with this war, Caris said. That should comfort us. Should. But then, she didn't feel any comfort herself. They didn't wait to see what happened. They pushed the skimmer to full speed and headed for home.